Questions and comments can be addressed to WRCT Pittsburgh, 5000 Forbes Avenue, Pittsburgh, PA, or call 621-0728.
Welcome to Left Out on WRCT 88.3 FM. Left Out is a public affairs program dedicated to presenting news and opinions from a perspective that's left out of the mainstream media. I'm Robert Harper.
I'm Danny Slater.
And we're here to have a discussion for the next hour about a number of political topics. You're welcome to call in, if you wish, at 621-WRCT, which is 621-9728, and area code 412. Or on campus, that would be 89728. Well, the first topic we wanted to discuss was, of course, the results of the Iowa caucuses, which I think were very surprising for just about everyone involved, including the candidates. As most of you know by now, John Kerry and John Edwards were the led the Iowa caucuses last night with 38% for Kerry and 32% for Edwards, and quite surprising given all of the opinion polls and I think commonly held opinion. Howard Dean finished third with 18%. So, Danny, what do you think about the outcome last night?
Well, I'm a little disappointed that Dean did so badly because I think there are a number of reasons why he may be actually the strongest candidate to run against Bush. For example, one of the Trump cards that should be played in the campaign against Bush is the war. And Kerry doesn't have so much weight in that area because he voted for the war. So Bush can simply say, well, if you thought this war was so bad, why did you vote for it? And sort of defuse that issue completely or almost completely.
Yeah, I think it will take a bit of dancing from Kerry to kind of explain himself on there. In fact, one thing that I've been surprised, although maybe this will come out as the primaries go on, is that neither he nor the other candidates who have voted in favor of the war don't take the position that, they were lied to. So far we've only heard them saying, well, there was the right thing to do at the time and I'm sticking to my decision because they don't want to back away from it.
Yeah. So that and again, one of the strongest things that, a card that could be played or a tool that could be used against Bush, and so far Kerry hasn't used it. So, I mean, it just seems like it's going to weaken his candidacy. I don't know.
On the other hand, I kind of relish the thought of a debate in which John Kerry is facing off against George Bush, with George trying to pretend that he is the master of national security.
Yeah, right. Well, he did fly that jet onto the aircraft carrier and declared that hostilities were over and the mission accomplished.
That's true. So, as Kerry pointed out last night, he has a tad more experience in that direction, having been a Navy pilot and, in fact, earning a Silver Star and I think three Bronze Stars or three something along that. A decorated veteran, anyway, from the Vietnam era. So, the other thing that was quite surprising was that Howard Dean finished not so much that he finished third, because I think anyone would have said neck and neck would have been expected outcome in any order. But finishing with 18% to 38% for Kerry and 32% for Edwards, to me, seemed rather surprising. I mean, all of the polls in advance seemed to indicate that Dean was in the lead. In fact, that it was going to be Dean versus Gephardt, and the two of those were slinging mud and fighting it out together. Now, what are your thoughts about the Dean campaign?
Actually, I really don't have any thoughts about it at all, Bob. I'm sorry I can't add anything to that. I know the caucus process is complicated, where they actually go into meeting rooms and actually start negotiating and move around from one candidate to the other during the meetings, and maybe that had an effect that wasn't measurable in the polls that they did beforehand. I don't know.
Right. I mean, there's always the question of what you can conclude from just one state like Iowa, for example, the Iowa caucuses. What does it mean? And really, probably it doesn't mean very much except in terms of the perception. But I guess the thing that I'm wondering about is that if obviously the polls were rather inaccurate, and maybe that's just the way it is, but the it was a bit surprising to think that there was such a strong support for Dean, and then it seemed to have collapsed. So I'm curious to see how this will play out in New Hampshire, as everyone else is, because that is also a very highly publicized primary that seems to have a lot of effect on what happens in the future.
I think the media really has – I think they've had a big impact on Dean, and I think they're treating him as an outsider, a person who's not to be trusted, a person that we, quote, don't know anything about, unquote. And I think that whole attitude has gradually eroded and has damaged his campaign, and that's what I see perhaps even getting worse in the future as we go on through the campaign.
Yeah, that may very well be. I mean, as with Al Gore in the last election, the press seemed to have adopted an attitude towards him that was just unshakable by any facts. It didn't matter what was true and what was not true. There was just this point, this idea that Al Gore was arrogant and Al Gore is a liar and so on. And it didn't matter that whatever they were saying was false. So I do worry about that with Howard Dean, and I certainly have detected that in the news item on Sunday night. I heard on the straight news at the top of the hour him referred to as this guy, Howard Dean, which is really says pretty much all we need to hear about
the attitude,
mainstream media attitude toward Howard Dean. On the other hand, one thing I noticed is with Kerry's speech last night is he's picking up on the tropes that Howard Dean has really carried him all the way to the front of the pack, which is directly attacking George Bush. And I really have to say this is really great news. I mean, Kerry was for quite a while floundering and seeming to find little traction on any particular issue, and suffering from the fact that he supported the war, and how could he criticize it? And Howard Dean was really running ahead on that. But now perhaps it turns out that one of Dean's roles anyway has been to force Kerry to be a bit more aggressive.
That's good, yeah.
So anyway, we'll see how it all shapes up. Who knows what will happen in New Hampshire? Maybe we have to remember that Joseph Lieberman and Clark are still in the race, although they weren't on the ballot in Iowa. So we'll see what happens in New Hampshire, and we'll keep you all posted as this goes on. As far as I'm concerned, the most important thing is anyone but Bush. All right, for our next topic, enough with the Iowa caucuses. Our next topic I would like to bring up is the progress with the September 11th investigation. And maybe we should have a little background in this. Of course, everyone knows that under extreme duress, the administration formed a commission to investigate the causes of the 9/11 attacks. And right from the very start, including their resistance to forming the commission to begin with, but also when the you may recall that the first chairman of the commission was named to be Henry Kissinger, but there was enough opposition to this decision that eventually it became the former governor of New Jersey, Thomas Keene. So about a week or so ago, I guess probably it was a little bit more than that. Let me check the date here. Thomas Keene appeared on CBS News talking about the progress with the investigation. And the interesting thing is that his comment was that the attacks were preventable, based on the information he's seen so far, that the attack was preventable, and that in his opinion, heads should roll. People who were responsible for this should not be keeping their jobs. Not still
and they
be
are
in
keeping
office,
their jobs.
And
no,
yet
there
they
has
are.
Been no head rolling so far, as far as we know.
So what do we have here? We have a situation where 3,000 people were killed in a heinous act of terrorism. And the government, the people who are in charge of dealing with this, like protecting or defending us from these kinds of attacks, absolutely nothing has happened. And not only that. So, for example, it's commonly reported that the Strategic Air Command didn't even scramble a single jet, even though they had something like 45 minutes at least with the jet that was headed toward Washington, D.C. to do something about it. So at the very least, there was a tremendous failure of our defense system, and yet, nothing has happened with it. But the thing that's even more repugnant is the way the Bush administration has been stonewalling the investigation. And in particular, they have a deadline of May, I don't know the exact date, in May for them to issue their final report. And this week the news was that Dennis Hastert is steadfastly refusing to extend the deadline for their report. So, Danny, you had a comment to make about the Keene interview on CBS News.
Yeah, that was an article that actually came out on CBS News on December 18th.
Oh, okay.
That article that was a big story because Keene said they're going to be really naming names and it's going to be a shocking report. That thing did not appear. No article appeared about that in the New York Times on that day or subsequent, as far as I know, so far at all. Was that the comment you're referring to?
Yes. I think I wrote to the New York Times ombudsman, Daniel Ockrent, to complain about this, but I haven't heard a thing. And I think you may have as well.
There was another story that didn't appear. Well, this is getting off on a tangent. I don't know if we're done with that. With that 9/11 commission.
No, I have a few other things that I think are important to bring out here, so let's hold off and look at these. So the situation we have now is that Thomas Keene, the chairman of the committee, is saying outright that the attacks were preventable and that heads should roll. This is really, I would say, underreported, but nevertheless, it was reported. It was on CBS News, but it seems to me that an allegation like that from the chairman of the committee should have received a greater press than it did. So meanwhile, you know, what's been happening with this committee, as is also extremely well known, is that the administration has been resisting steadfastly turning over any documents which would reveal what it is that they knew and when did they know it, to paraphrase the famous questions from the Watergate era. And so part of the whole process here is that since the investigation is slated to end in May, one way or the other, then this stonewalling and delaying tactics, of course, are intended to undermine their investigation. That's clear. But the other thing, there are two other things that I wanted to mention about the commission that I think are very significant. One is that Condoleezza Rice will be subpoenaed to testify before the commission, but there's actually a lot of discussion because she and other White House operatives are resisting testifying under oath. Now, Danny, what do you make of that?
Well, Condoleezza Rice was also the person who said, well, we had no idea they would use jetliners to fly into buildings, when in fact there had been reports by various agencies saying this was definitely a threat, that she just either wasn't aware of it or was just lying about that when it was asked, when she was asked about it. But the idea that she wouldn't want to go under oath, well, I don't know. Well, why would you not want to go under oath unless you were going to lie? I mean, what other reason would you not want to go under oath?
It certainly does invite you to suspect that she may have something to hide. That's all I can say about that. The other thing that I think is really of significant interest connected with the 9/11 Commission is that two members of the commission, Zellico and I can't think of his name at the moment, another member of the commission, two members of the 9/11 Commission appointed by the Bush administration were actually required to testify before the commission itself. So what does that mean?
Well, that means that they were somehow involved in the chain of command or in the decisions or in the information that was that was ignored or there was something that they did involving national security. So why are they on the commission?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's Philip Zellico and Jamie Gorelick are the two members of the commission who have actually been called to testify before the commission because of their knowledge and involvement in national security planning. And in fact, Zellico was in charge of Bush's transition team for national security issues. And so he was a direct advisor on issues of national security and therefore has information about what was known in advance. But here we are. He is going to be investigating himself. Somehow this whole story seems a little bit suspect, if you ask me, that the whole conduct of this commission smacks of cover-up and stonewalling and an effort to hide something.
Yeah. Well, another example of the stonewalling process is what Cheney has done with the Energy Commission that he ran. They've been stonewalling various organizations who want to get the information of who they talk to about the energy policy, and they've succeeded in so far for 3 years, and maybe they'll succeed until November of 2004, until after the election, to explain, you know, who they were talking to when they made their energy policy.
Well, I will wager that it was Ken Lay and Ken Lay and Ken Lay and Ken Lay, and maybe a few other of the Enron friends. But yeah, here's an interesting point on that. That case is going to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court has accepted it, is going to be deciding the case. This past weekend, reported in the New York Times, the esteemed Supreme Court Justice Scalia went duck hunting with Dick Cheney over the weekend. Okay, and he's going to be deciding a decision of really great national importance, in which Dick Cheney is the defendant. And to me, this is just outrageous conflict of interest.
I agree, Bob. I think we should take a little break. After that, we'll be discussing questions like the idea of democracy in Iraq. Does that really make any sense? Issues of electronic voting, Pittsburgh distressed economy. We may get to those issues if we have time. I'm just mentioning them, so in case you feel like calling, you can give us a call. The number is 412-268-9728. That's 268-WRCT. And we'll take a break and listen to some music and then continue.